You are listening to Let's Talk Tribe, the official Let's Go Tribe podcast.
Swung and lined to deep left field. It is gone!
This is Let's Talk Tribe, the official Let's Go Tribe podcast, episode 160. I am your host, Matt Lyons, and in this week's episode, you may have heard of a little trade that happened last week. Francisco Lindor and Carlos Carrasco are now members of the Mets. Talk about their legacy with Cleveland and the return they got with Amed Rosario and Andrés Giménez. We'll talk about the state of the team, and of course, we'll answer your questions. Joining me for all that and more is another Mr. Merritt Rolfing. Merritt, how you doing?
Hey, I'm great. And you?
Oh, going great. My favorite baseball team is doing really good things. It's really great.
The Pirates, right? And I remember you saying a while back you were a huge
Pirates fan.
It's a big old Bucks fan.
I think I talked about it with Jason before you came on, but I actually used to have a Pirates hat when I was little, and then like a clown touched it at like a parade, and then I lost the hat and I cried for like a whole day. So now I hate the Pirates.
It turns out it's the Pirates who are the clowns, Matt. It turns out that's the real truth we found here. Not you nor that clown, but the Pirates.
The real clowns were the friends we made along the way.
Yeah, I'm great. I'm trying to think of a good movie I saw this weekend, and I realized I didn't watch any movies this weekend. So, sorry, I don't have any good reports for you in Merritt's Movie Corner. I could tap into some past viewings. I finally watched Gone Girl.
Really? Just now watched Gone Girl?
Shut up. I don't watch movies a lot, all right?
Wasn't that great at the beginning, not to watch it several years later?
You're wrong. I enjoyed it, and you're wrong. I believe
it. That's fine. You can't leave Merritt. You know why? Do you know why you can't leave Merritt?
Why?
It's time for meatballs. Where, of course, we serve everybody little tidbits of information over the plate.
Spicy meatball.
This time of year, we're doing classic meatballs where we look at old things, basically, because there's nothing going on. But, Mayor, I'll let you take yours first because mine's going to kind of segue into our next section. So you can start with yours.
All right, man. I'm starting a little sub-series within the meatball. underneath
we're going to have a meatball lore chart pretty soon of the hierarchy.
I don't know. I just got bored earlier and I started researching like really stupid games and performances in Cleveland baseball history. And, you know, just like weirdly outsized performances. What the hell was going on here? This doesn't make any sense in anyone's context. And so I want you to give me your opinion once I explain what I'm talking about here about this game that was pitched by Tom Candiotti back in 1988. Now, Candiotti pitched a complete game. Which normally when a player pitches a complete game, he's having a great game, correct? Typically, if he's going to go 9 innings, he's doing pretty well for himself, I would think. Wouldn't you say so?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of factors, but yeah, mostly.
He gave up 12 hits and 6 earned runs. He threw 151 pitches in those 9 innings.
Jesus.
Now, Cleveland ended up winning 12-6, extending their record to a league best at the time, I believe, 15-4 in late April. That was that weird year they had where people were considering them like future contenders before they fell back into the toilet for a couple of years. Anyway, what do you think? I tried to look into it. Cleveland.com could have been demanding I give them money. And I said, no, Cleveland.com, you'll get no money from me. I don't believe in local journalism. Only blogs and podcasters from Brooklyn is all I care about. That's who I give money to. Give us money. I'm not from Brooklyn. What do you think was going on in this game? I mean, do you think that the manager was mad at him? Now, for a little bit more context, the Mariners scored 2 runs in the first and then 4 in the third, and then he shut them out the rest of the game. The Indians scored 2 in the first, 5 in the fourth, 4 in the fifth, and 1 in the seventh, off the back of several different home runs from Joe Carter and Jay Bell. Among many others. I don't know. What do you think was going on with this? Would you call this a stupid game? He was a negative win probability added was Candiotti at the time. So interesting stuff, I thought. What do you think?
Was it just like a doubleheader, like 2 doubleheaders in a row, like 2 days in a row or something?
No, I mean, I can't see any goddamn reason why this happened. Why did they just forget they had a bullpen? They had a bullpen in 1988. It was still a thing. I don't know if it was good or not. I'll look it up right now. It was okay. They had a guy named Doug Jones, you know, the vice president from OCP. They had some other players as well. But yeah, I don't know. Candiotti was good that year. 3.28 ERA, 14-8, pitched 216 innings. I believe I looked into it, and if this game hadn't have happened, instead of a 3.28 ERA, he would have had a 2.94 ERA, I think, if my math is correct. So it did definitely impact him, but just a weird game.
When was
game.
It in the season? Was it like in the middle of the season or towards the end?
No, April 26th, early in the season. Jesus. I mean,
I don't know.
The manager was Doc Edwards. Cleveland was, as I mentioned, 15-4 after that win, and they ended 78-84. So they definitely hit a bit of a swoon. I wonder if their starting pitching got tired. That'd be an interesting thing to look into, I suppose. Maybe I'll look into that next week. Anyway, I thought that was a fun, weird, shitty thing. He was a negative impact on a team that ended up on a game that ended up winning, and threw 154 pitches, which is the third most recorded by a Cleveland pitcher in history. Here we go.
In a totally normal, sane game. That's
totally normal. He was a 5.7 win guy that year, second on the team behind Greg Swindell, another pitcher.
You think you'd like dump that kind of game on your worst pitcher, not
literally the second best pitcher on your team. Yeah, John Farrell should have been doing that, or Rich Yett, or Scott Bales, the wily lefty.
Or Sam McDowell. I don't care if he didn't play then. He should have been doing it.
I mean, Bud Black was a pitcher on that team. He started 7 games, for God's sake. So, you know. Anyway, neat stuff, I thought. Kind of a weird outlier of a game. We'll look into more of these as we move through the offseason.
Yeah. So I'm going to cheat for mine in several ways. Because one, I just wrote a post on. And two, it's not a classic one. It's not a moldy meatball. It's just
They're calling him Cheat Ball Matt. So here we go. Go ahead.
So mine is about Ahmed Rosario. Maybe you've heard of him. He was former Mets prospect. He was a top prospect for a while, like number two, number three in baseball. I don't know if you heard about this, but he got traded to the Indians, the Cleveland Indians of all teams, for Francisco Lindor.
It stands to reason this could have no tying to Cleveland so far, though, on account of he has yet to do a single thing.
Correct, yes. But last year, like everybody else, he played a shortened season. One of the big things about Rosario coming up through the minors, and especially after he debuted, when it was clear it was an issue, was pitch selection. He was just really terrible at it in his rookie year. Second year in 2018, it was still pretty bad. And then he just sort of like peaked in 2019, where he was 100 WRC plus player, like dead average. But with his speed and defense, I mean, he was still like a 2.7 more player. So he was perfectly fine. He hit 15 home runs that year. And then last year in the shortened season, he just tanked again. He was just as bad as rookie year. He kept swinging everything outside of the zone. He doesn't swing in the zone either. It's not like Tim Anderson where he swings at everything. He just swings at the wrong pitches. He's just bad at identifying pitches, apparently. But I think there's a level of hope we can have for him that he wasn't just that he didn't just suddenly regress. I think because it was such a short season, he saw a huge spike in changeups, because the year prior, like every other year, he's seen around like 8% changeups against him. Last year was 14%, 14.9 is basically 15% changeups that he saw. And he faced the Marlins, who are like one of the most changeup heavy teams, with Pablo Lopez and Sixto Sanchez. So I think looking at Ahmed Rosario, my little meatball for him is it's just the changeup. I think it was his little fluky thing of seeing a ton of changeup last year. He always hits him really weak. So even if he does manage to square him up and swing at the right one, he barely ever hits him well. So with such a weird short season, I think that's kind of a thing to point out with Rosario. And sort of a similar note too with the other player there brought over, Andrés Giménez, who kind of a weird thing with him. I was looking at someone in the Let's Go Tribe comments mentioned that his projections, like everything else about him, is projected to be way better, except his on-base percentage is like several points lower. And I looked into it. The reason is everything else next year is projected like right along the same percentages as this year, but he got hit 4 times, which is a ton over a full season if you extrapolate it out. And like the only difference that dropped his on-base percentage by a bunch is that he is projected to be hit a normal amount of times, not like a Brandon Guyer level. So of a 2-for-1 meatball, but that's another interesting one that when you have these short seasons, these little anomaly things can make a big difference, because it's the equivalent of like a month in Major League Baseball, but it was just a couple. It was the full season, which is going to look weird forever because it's going to be on their scorecard or their rundown of stats. But I think these little things you can just kind of discount because of the weird stuff that happened last year.
And I also, too, I mean, and this is just something in general I was thinking about for a while this year. I mean, we just saw so much more use of bullpens. I mean, we didn't really, because we watched Cleveland and all they do is lean on their starting pitching so much. But more generally, starters are throwing less and less innings. Part of that was It was more of a, you know, it was more of a sprint than a marathon like usual. And also they just had more players. Like I think that, well, the first like 2 or 3 weeks, whatever it was, you'd have 30 players. So it stands to reason they probably just added 3 more start like relief pitchers, and you're going to go to them more often if you're trying to win. Like I said, it's there was more opportunity to get into the playoffs, and there were more slots, and as you touched on, kind of the variability of it all, there was a lot more noise. So, I mean, again, it still sounds like Rosario is just he's hunting fastball, which is when you don't have good recognition skills.
Oh, don't get me wrong, he absolutely is. His thing. Just, he does not have good pitch recognition.
It looks very ugly when you are doing that and missing blatantly. But yeah, that's something to think about.
Yeah, it goes into thing we can avoid.
You did cheat on this one because this literally happened this year, and I'm very upset with you about this. I was hoping for more garbage about let's pick a random player's name. I don't know. I'm literally going to do that. I'm going to the 1959 Cleveland. I wanted to hear more about what Woody Held was doing. Woody Held. Or Vic Power. Oh, come on. These are all porn star names. What's going on here?
Hey, Vic Power, we talked about before.
We did. That's true. Yeah. What a name. Mini Mendoza. Oh, there he is. Rocky Colavito. Look at that handsome boy. Tito Francona. Any of these other characters. These Chaparinos. No.
Ahmed Rosario. That's who I'm going
with. Nope. We want to talk about the legend himself. Ahmed Rosario.
Yeah, because obviously the big news for Cleveland this week was that they acquired Ahmed Rosario, Andres Jimenez, and two really low-level prospects. They were drafted like the year before. Isaiah Green and what is his first name? Wolf is the pitcher, who I think was the one that was just drafted this year. So we haven't seen much of those two at all, and we won't really until this year. But the other two, Josh Wolf, there you go. Rosario's been in the league for a little bit. He was, like I mentioned, a top prospect who really faded pretty much right when he came up with the Mets. Right up until his debut, there was the fact that he didn't have a lot of power, but like Francisco Lindor, it was thought that he would just sort of turn it on when he hit the majors, when he would mature a little more. Because the thing with him and Jimenez, they're both really, really young at every level, which is a thing the Indians seem to like a lot when they're going through prospects. But then you have like Rosario, who was young at every level, outperformed, and then he just didn't do well in the majors. But then Jimenez is kind of the opposite. He was really good in the lower levels. He kind of hit a brick wall in AA, and then he was a perfectly average hitter in the shortened season last year. But like Rosario being really bad, you can't really take Jimenez being average and assume he's going to be that forever just because it was such a weird shortened season. But I don't know. I guess we can start with talking about Lindor and Carrasco, the fact that they're gone now and how much that sucks. Because I think we talked about earlier this offseason that we expected Lindor to be gone, but Carrasco was a really shitty line to cross. And now he's traded. They're both kind of gone.
I don't know. I guess, and I don't want to, I'm sure we've all complained to spouses who don't want to listen to us about this at all enough over the last several days. But it confused me, I guess. My only comment I really have on it is beyond this sucks, and I really liked watching Cookie pitch, was I just feel like they could have gotten more in two separate deals than lumping it all into one thing, only because.
Oh, yeah.
And it just sucks because we have no leg to stand on when it comes to questioning the Cleveland front office when they make deals, because they almost invariably come out ahead. And it just, but with this one, you're just like, how the fuck are they going to come out ahead on this one?
I mean, this is one where it felt the most like a salary dump over everything.
Right, exactly. Which is just, shitty. And my overall assumption is just that the ownership is cutting liabilities as much as possible in advance of a sale to make it a more attractive sale. And then my dad brought up them moving to Nashville, which I was like, all right, I don't fucking Nashville of all the places.
I mean, there is a push to get a team there, but I would assume expansion before somebody moves. But
I know. Well, I don't know. Hey, I mean, it was the entire theme or storyline or whatever, inciting incident in everyone's favorite movie, Major League. So I don't know.
Yeah.
Got to keep that moving. Ever since they moved a team to Tampa, there's always got to be that place that people threaten to move to, Because like
it's been Nashville forever now.
The White Sox, they threatened to move to Tampa before they got their beautiful new park back in 1990. But
it's hard to imagine people threatening to go to Tampa now.
I know, right?
How many people attend those games?
Well, this is completely off topic. They always come out with those sweet like mock-ups of what the new stadium's going to look like. It's going to be right on the water. It's going to look a fucking sailboat or something. It's going to have get there, big...
just the dumpster inside.
Yeah, it's just like, this is trash. This is a falling over orb. What's going on here? This is bad. This is no good. There's great stadiums around there. I went there for my bachelor party, and I had some had a blast down there going to minor league games, but no major league for me, thanks.
Yeah.
But anyway, go back to the trade. You know, it sucks just because you feel like they could have gotten something in a different deal because everyone needs pitching and everyone needs a top, I don't know, what do you want to call it, 25 pitcher in baseball. The Lindor thing sucks, but I just, you know, you kind of, we kind of made our, I feel like I made my peace with that ages ago.
Oh, yeah. I wasn't mad about that at all when it happened. I was mad about the Carrasco being tacked on. Yeah, and it was also the
like
fact that
throwing, like, it should have been, like, they were going to throw in a pitcher. It should have been like, I don't know, who sucks? Someone. I don't know. Some relief from Phil Maton or something. I don't know.
Yeah, somebody. But it felt like just a, I don't know. He wasn't, what would they have gotten in this trade if they didn't include him? I can't imagine the Mets would have said no trading those four players for Francisco Lindor. I don't know. It feels like, I don't know.
Yeah, who volunteered Carrasco? Yeah, how'd that come up?
Son of a bitch in the front office.
What the hell?
And it's also because he was, I mean, he's literally weeks away from getting his 10 to 5 rights, which is 10 years in the league, or 10 years of service time, 5 with the same team, and then you can veto a trade anywhere. So he's literally weeks of service time away from, he would have got it in spring training, and they traded him right before that, which just sucks. That's like one of the things you shoot for as a player if you're on the same team forever, is that you have control over basically where you can spend the end of career, because you can sign as a free agent, veto trades, but...
Because at this point, he's not going to spend more than 3 years in any single place. Like, it just, I don't see that happening.
Right. Yeah.
At all. He's already, what, 32 or whatever it is? I mean, he'll be with the Mets until, I'm just pulling up this shit right now. He's not 22. No, sir. He's 33. Now, he's going to be 34 this year. And, like, his contract is up 2023. They probably won't re-sign him. And by then, he's going to be 36 anyway. So,
yeah, but then it's whatever. But, yeah. I wouldn't have minded him riding it out in Cleveland. I mean, like, I guess maybe I'm excited for Cal Quantrill. I think he's going to be fun to watch, but I would assume he'd take over the last spot in the rotation. Now you got Bieber. What is it? Bieber, Plesac, Savali, McKenzie, I'd assume. And then like Quantrill, unless McKenzie goes to the bullpen or something. But it's just crazy that they still have a good rotation after trading Carrasco. It would have been better with him, but I think it's still crazy good without him. But yeah, I think, and even like their goodbye messages, I want to make it clear I don't fault Lindor for any of this, but I don't know if you saw the difference between their two. Lindor just had a very clearly pre-produced like highlight reel of his plays in Cleveland, that his message was much love, Cleveland, and that was like it. Then Carlos Carrasco wrote this big long paragraph about how much he loved the city. Like, I've never felt, I think we mentioned this before too, that like Lindor is just a superstar, and it's like superstars everywhere, but like Carrasco felt like a Cleveland thing. Right. Like Jose Ramirez feels the same way, but it feels like more Lindor is baseball's superstar than Cleveland's superstar. It always felt like that to me. Like, I was really happy to have him in Cleveland. I'm glad we got to watch him close for so long, but I feel like he's always just a baseball treasure, and Carrasco was supposed to be ours, and like Jose Ramirez is, but now they're both, I mean, not both. Well, we can talk about the fact that Jose Ramirez
let's not talk about that this week,
man. But Carrasco is gone. But.
No, like you said, I agree. Like, it's, being a Cleveland fan, you don't really get a long time with super duper stars. So you find things about players that you like, and like you said, make them your own. I mean, it just so happens that Jose Ramirez has grown up into a legitimate, you know, superstar in his own right. I mean, arguably over the last couple of years, probably better even than Lindor, but he's just not quite as charismatic, I guess. I don't know. I think he's charismatic. I think he's awesome. Quite honestly, I think he's the coolest.
Oh, yeah, I think he's a better player, too. Like, he's a better on-field and off-player than Lindor. As much as I love Lindor, I think Jose Ramirez is probably a better overall player, just given how well he hits. But then
Carrasco, he was never the best pitcher, but there was always that, especially young, a couple years ago, like, it felt like if it all clicked at once, he could win a Cy Young. Like, he was in lockstep with, or just like a step behind, like, Kluber as being the second best pitcher on the team, and all this sort of a thing, and this wonderful luxury we had, and this, you know, everyone was like, oh man, Kluber's so good, and Bauer is so potential ridden. And then we're always like, yo, motherfuckers don't even know about Carrasco. And it was cool, but now he's gone, and it sucks.
And then now he's just like the tacked on guy on the trade, too.
Yeah, exactly.
He's
throwing? What's going on here? Come on now. Like, it's funny how twice now in his career he's been traded, and both times he was a throw in. So that's kind of funny. So what I'm saying is, I hope he wins a Cy Young.
He was the main person in the other trade, but
yeah. No, he was not. He was not, no, the other guy was.
He just, and the Cliff Leach trade? Yeah, he was.
He was not. No, he was not. He was 100% he was not. He was years away from the majors. The other guy was totally the focus. He just couldn't.
Who was the other guy?
Stay healthy. Aaron Knapp? I want to say.
Well, he was like the equivalent of. Not Rosario,
he was like their top. Sucks, he was one of their top pitching prospects at the time.
Like, Carrasco was a prospect, though. It wasn't like a Michael Brantley thing where he was just a throw-in. He was a little more.
Yeah, sure, but he was like deep down in the minors. Like he wasn't anything. This is the most contentious conversation we've ever had on this podcast.
Because you're wrong, Merritt. I'll fight.
Was it Jason Knapp? Yeah, Jason Knapp was definitely the.
Yeah, I remember Jason. And they got Lou Marson. That's Hall of Famer Lou Marson. They got.
I saw him hit his only home run in his career, so I was the person for that one. I felt really special about that one.
Now, man, Jason Stark, when he wrote about the trade, I want to note that he said Carlos Carrasco first, and then Jason Knapp, because Carrasco was in AAA at the trade, and the Knapp was in Single A, and Lou Marson, who he said was the heir apparent to Victor Martinez.
Of course, that worked out Jack, well. Yeah, heir apparent to Kelly Shopik. That's what he was. There he is. I take that back. I did not see him hit his first career home run. I saw him hit his second career home run. No. Yeah, it was 2 years later, but it still happened, and I was still happy about it. First in Cleveland, so there you go.
Yeah. Did Knapp even ever do anything? I know we're getting off topic again, but...
No, he never got out of the minors. He was just always hurt and stuff. Yeah. I mean, he was good. Like, the numbers were fun, and he just struck everyone out and threw hard, but then it was just like, no.
Yeah.
No.
But yeah, it's... I mean, it is what it is. It's...
Him and Adam Miller, man. There's a name people don't remember.
I mean, there's a lot of... There's Matt LaPorta. There's a lot... I guess there's Bradley Zimmer's sort of counts, but there's a lot fewer just...
At least Matt LaPorta played in the majors. I mean, Adam Miller always had blister problems and it disappeared. I'll never forget him. He was like, oh, his blisters are popping up again. Like,
he's oozing all over the baseball again. Get him out of here.
Why did you just do something? I mean, come on. Catcher's saying. Yeah. Guys like, what's his name? Jorge Posada never have blister problems.
Yeah, why can't you be Jorge Posada? What's wrong with you?
Why can't you be like Jorge Posada? Be on your hands. Come on now. It's good for you.
I mean, looking at what the Indians got back from it, it's... I mean, the other two, Green and Wolf, are not going to contribute to anything for a long time. But, I mean, Rosario and Jimenez, they're going to be up there right away. I thought it was interesting that...
That would be the middle infield for the team, right? Yeah, probably. I mean,
that's the whole middle infield, yeah. It's also weird they didn't get a single outfielder in this deal. I would assume they want to move one of them to the outfield, maybe. I think Jimenez has played the outfield in the minors, and Rosario was there like four innings last year when it was clear he wasn't going to be the shortstop. But... I would assume, I think their plan just seems to be, unless they're just absolutely just hate outfielders, is like to just grab a bunch of athletic middle infielders and convert them whenever they can, because that's what they have in their minor leagues. It's all infielders. They just keep getting more and more. It's like they see something they can just convert. Like, they don't feel that it matters that you play outfield a whole lot, but I guess we'll see how that works out. Because that's what they're doing with Nolan Jones. He was a third baseman, and now he's going to be probably a left fielder. But, I mean, as far as the roster next year...
Why do you think they're going to move one of these guys to the outfield? I mean, they don't have a second baseman, and they don't have a shortstop.
I mean, they don't have outfielders.
Well, they have bad outfielders. They literally have no infielders. Like, they have nothing there right now. They have an outfield. I'll describe it to you. It's
Please don't.
Okay. All right. That's fine. I don't really want to talk about it anyway. It makes you sad.
I mean, they do have Yu Chang that can play at second base. So it's the same argument as the outfield, that it's still bad, but it's still there.
I mean, Naylor's going to be there, and they got Greg Allen. They have, what's his name, their center fielder.
You know Greg Allen. Oscar Mercado?
Oscar Mercado, and then they have, who's the other guy?
There's Bradley Zimmer. So what Roster Resource has, which is Fangraphs thing, they have it as Josh Naylor in left field to start, obviously, because they're not going to call up Nolan Jones right away. But it's Naylor, Bradley Zimmer, and then Daniel Johnson, which seems really optimistic for Zimmer, but... They have Mercado and Lublo on this team,
Matt. I just realized
there's a couple. Yeah, they sort of made some more too by trading their best shortstop and one of their pitchers.
Thought about it until just now, but Jesus Christ!
I'm just looking at this is not a good looking lineup. If you look, so just to run down what Roster Resource has, which of course is not what it's going to land at, but they have Jimenez, Naylor, Ramirez, Reyes, Bowers, which that's something. Jake Bowers at first base, Roberto Perez, Daniel Johnson, Rosario, Zimmer. That is ugly. That's. I'm sure it won't look quite like that, and hopefully very quickly Nolan Jones will come up, but they got to add something, right? Like, we can't be looking at this.
I don't know. Can't we? I don't know, man.
I mean, the third year in a row, Chris Antonetti did say that they're going to reinvest the savings, so maybe this is the one?
Maybe they're going to get a new whirlpool. Maybe they're going to get more ping pong. Maybe this is the year. I don't know.
Maybe this is the ping pong table here.
Maybe they're going to flip everyone they got in this trade for Trevor Story. I don't know. Something weird like that. That'd be a strange maneuver.
I mean, I think the two most likely like free agents are, what, Eddie Rosario and Jock Peterson are the outfielders. But, again, those cost money, Merritt. We don't have that. We got to buy whirlpools. We can't be buying players.
Does Jock Peterson really cost that much money, though? I mean, probably what is that much money? I guess when you're worried about $12 million, I guess then it is a lot of money.
Yeah.
I realized I was looking at the Baseball Reference team from 2020. I realized how many of these people just aren't on the team anymore. I was like, oh, damn, all these guys. First baseman, second baseman, shortstop, center fielder, right fielder that are listed as their highest played people are all gone.
Well, how many do you think
Santana's gone? Sandy Leon is gone. Bradley Zimmer sucks. Mike Freeman's gone. Greg Allen's gone. Bo Taylor? When did Bo Taylor? Oh, yeah.
He's still here. He's still on the 40-man roster.
Yeah, okay. Yu Chang. This is the year, baby. Yu Chang is back. Finally.
Chang's year. I mean, he does have a chance. Was it this year or is last year already blending in where he said he wanted to give Yu Chang a chance? I can't remember anymore. But, I mean, he could be a second baseman if they're going to move Jimenez in the outfield or something. But I do agree with you. I think they're probably going to be the two infielders, but
yeah. Oh, just because I'm the numbers aren't very, we don't have a lot of sample size on it, but Jimenez does rate very highly defensively as a shortstop, so that's a positive at least. And it's hard to rate high as a shortstop when you're playing on the Mets because their infield defense as a whole wasn't very good, and so like you're being asked to do more. So. It sucks, again, but it's going to be ugly. Run prevention is once again the name of the game, which is depressing, let me tell you. We're really counting on a breakout year from, I guess, Jake Bowers and Nolan Jones and Daniel Johnson, I suppose. This team is going to be so young, dude. I don't know. I'm getting that weird feeling I had back in 2013 when I was excited about a bunch of young guns trying their darndest in baseball.
That is the other thing, though. Like, it's fun watching the young guys. It's instead of like bringing in Jock Peterson, whatever. If they weren't on the end of just dismantling everything, this would be probably a fun. This would be a fun 2015 team to watch with where the Indians were then.
Right.
Like if we were before everything happened, this would be a fun team. But
I just realized something that we keep on monkey's pawing ourselves because a couple years ago we were like, I just wish the games were more exciting and they were more of a fight. And then the Twins got really good. We're like, ah, damn. And now we're like, remember the old days where we just watch all those young prospects come and get to write about neat new things coming up? Those were fun days, huh? And then they're like, okay. No, not this way, please, no. And so that is what is happening. All the players are gone.
Now,
this team is going to be predominantly under 25. Like, there's going to be a tremendous number of people in the lineup between the ages of definitely under 26. Outside of Jose Ramirez and Perez and
is Bradley Luplo, Zimmer 26?
I guess Bradley Zimmer is still he's 27. Naylor's 23. I mean, Daniel Johnson's 24. This team's going to be, Yu Chang's still only 24. Mercado's 25. The old salt that he is.
I mean, it does have the chance if all these guys like click and they all hit at the same time. It could be.
Yes.
I gotta have at least a little bit of optimism, right? Like, this is the kind of team where if it does happen, it's like 2016 all over again, where it's just a fun young team that comes up together and does a bunch of stuff.
I would say more 2014. If I was going to pick a recent season where it feels like if things start clicking together, then it's gonna be awesome. Cause like, then we're talking about like things like Michael Brantley exploding out of nowhere and becoming an MVP candidate.
Yeah,
or all the different things that happened in 2014 were really exciting that led them to get into the playoffs. You're right. Like if they can actually get any of their young players to actually perform, then that's actually exciting. Mm-hmm. And I mean, they're not going to allow a lot of runs is the thing. They're going to take runs off the board defensively because they're still good at that, especially in the infield. Rosario is very good. Again, based on the numbers, Jimenez is very, very good. Jose Ramirez, we've been watching for years now. We know how good he is. They're going to get more athletic at first, especially if they move Bowers there, and Roberto Perez he probably wins five games a year. I'll be honest with you, I think he wins by himself five games a year for this team. Yeah. I think he is if we could actually chart it correctly, I think he is an 8-win-a-year player overall, even despite hitting 165. Like he's so tremendous behind the plate and defensively. So they're going to win games defensively as long as they can get a couple of gloves in the outfield. I think.
Do you know who we're missing here, though, Merritt? Who we're missing talking about? A first baseman. Neither of us mentioned him yet.
Oh no. Oh yeah, that's right. Franmil Reyes exists.
No, not Franmil Reyes. We mentioned him.
Hell yeah.
Technically, woo! Bobby Bradley.
Oh, right.
Way less excited. The big dingers, though, Merritt. Come on, he's got to hit him eventually, right?
I mean, Franmil Reyes is our big digger boy. We already have a big digger boy, and he's only 24.
I want two big digger boys. I don't want Jake Bowers.
I want all these big digger boys.
I mean, is Bobby Bradley, like, is he just done? If Jake Bowers is the opening day first baseman, I mean, like, what chance does Bobby Bradley have to stick around in Cleveland?
And it sucks because of what happened in 2020 with not being able to play, right?
Yeah.
Like, just in general. So maybe he's good again. I don't know. It's weird to say there's a lot riding on spring training because, like, literally we've been able to write down most of the roster since about 2014. Like, you look at the depth chart and you know starter and probably lead backup since then. Without a few moving parts. But now we do not have any of that because, as I said before, five of the nine batting order slots of most players is gone. So maybe you're right. Maybe, I mean, this is his chance. I'm 100% in on it, man. I mean, if he can hit 230 with a 340 on base percentage and just basically become, it feels weird to say, a poor man's, who's your favorite player on the Rangers?
Joey Gallo?
Joey Gallo, a poor man's Gallo of some kind. I mean, you know, not someone like something more like what he did in, I would say 2018 would be a batting line that I'd be okay with seeing from him. 206, 312, 498 with 40 home runs. I'll take it, man. 200 some odd strikeouts, 75 walks. I mean, and then I can start writing articles.
He's going to strike out a ton. Yeah.
If he could just walk five more times, man, we're talking about a superstar here. I love those articles.
Yeah, I mean, the team's going to be frustrating as hell, but don't get me wrong. It's tremendous content. We're going to have so much random little things to talk about. And then,
so here's a fun thing. Joey Gallo, he didn't actually start playing in any real sense until 2017 when he was 23 years old. Now, how old is our new hero, Bobby Bradley?
23, I'm assuming.
He's 24, actually.
Oh, close.
I'll be 25 this year, but still. Maybe just because he had to take a year off, maybe he'll be good now and extra beefy, and this will be his year. So I'd be okay with that. You know, just a big dinger boy, the kind of player that upsets old school people because, like, he's always striking out. He's hitting 200. He's hitting 198. Oh, hell yeah, he is. There we go, baby.
But do you remember that one home run that he hit? It was literally only one, but good Lord, he blessed him that thing.
Oh, it was tremendous. Destroyed. Absolutely tremendous. I mean, he should just do what I do when I'm playing MLB The Show. Poorly, just swing at every single pitch and you'll connect 40 times probably. I don't know, right?
And one of those is going to go really far really fast.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you'll probably pull a few really foul, like that one foul ball that Mike Napoli had in, what was that, the playoffs in the World Series, that basically hit out of the stadium but the wrong way.
Right. Yeah.
So yeah, Jennings, I don't know, just did his thing anyway. Sorry, I missed I missed Jeopardy tonight, sadly. I was busy prepping hard for this podcast.
By watching Jeopardy and Ken Jennings.
I was not watching Jeopardy. I was working, Matt. Oh. I was working hard, all right? Very, very hard. Just busting my bum.
And we kind of did just sort of drift into, I guess, the state of the team, but...
We kind of did, but I mean, I guess my overall take on what came back... And I think this is just how we have to be, because it sucks. I'm pissed because of the emotional thing of, what the fuck are we rooting for here? Laundry? Yes. Obviously, that's true. Rooting for a bunch of Ivy League. So I read The Defector, all the guys from Deadspin.
Yeah.
And they started their own website, and I paid them money for some reason. I'm actually paying for news, Matt. Look at me. But Ray Ratto writes for them, and he was like, he referred to general managers up as like Ivy League B students. I thought that was pretty funny. <That's good. laughs> Like, they can't get a job at like Blackstone or something like that.
So that's right, yeah. The baseball team.
We're just rooting for these Ivy League B students to make the right move over and over and keep on spinning the wheel until it comes up head or whatever, red more often than not. And I guess that's what we're hoping for with basically this trade. Of course, I'm going to miss Francisco Lindor. He made some of the best plays I've ever seen. But benefiting me personally, Merritt Rolfing, he's coming to Washington, D.C. like 9 times next year. And I have a good friend who lives in New York City. And I can just drive up there, stay at his place, and go to Mets games. So... I can see him whenever I want now. Time was I couldn't because he played in Cleveland, and I don't live anywhere near Cleveland. So here's hoping for a a vaccine, and then I can go and see some baseball.
A vaccine and a good road trip, and I'm good to go. There you go.
There we go, baby. That's the story of my life or something.
And I get to watch them on, I guess not cable, because I don't get that channel, I don't think, on YouTube TV. But I could technically watch them in my, SNY, which is a really good broadcast, by the way. Like, I love our weird Rick Manning son, but
not top five.
SNY is really good.
They're actually good, not the weird.
Not Rick Manning good, where it's just kind of like our own, we love him because he's weird and probably not good. They're actually legitimately good.
Our weird dumb uncle. And of course, Matt, who we also love. I love Matt Underwood also.
We do. He followed me on Twitter too. So now
we're gonna indoctrinate him.
Just start talking about, what was the thing we said? Like, just start messing up. Josh Naylor jumps over a ditch. Oh,
Josh Naylor's huge ditch that he uses to jump over to practice gym.
Well, I'll just keep mentioning that on Twitter and just hope that Matt Underwood mentions it on there someday. He just can't remember where he saw it, but he knows. Like, Josh Naylor jumps over a huge ditch in his backyard.
Yes, he does.
There you go.
I miss baseball. I'm going to hear Rick Manning say,
I know.
Yes, he does. There it is.
I want to see the Indians with Rick Manning do the Nickelodeon broadcast that they did for the playoff game.
I did not watch that. You're not a Nickelodeon, so I don't know what you're talking about. I don't know what I don't get your references.
Well, they had, so I mean, obviously the weird graphics, there was a slime and all that, but they also had somebody who was just like, I guess, a star from a Nickelodeon show who she never saw a baseball game, I guess, because she was acting as, what do you call that in a story where like you're the person who asks questions so you get the why am I blanking on that term?
It's not Mary Sue.
No, it's not Mary Sue. Like the
kind of, it's like you're the eyes of the audience, basically.
Right.
You're the eyes of the reader. Yeah. You're the stand-in for the reader or something like that in a story or whatever.
Yeah. So she was doing stuff like when they threw a fly, like, why'd they do that? And then Nate Burleson explained it. But fun. I want to see and there was slime and that was cool. But I want to see that with Rick Manning and Matt Underwood in the booth and just some like 12-year-old superstar Nickelodeon trying to talk to Rick Manning. He's like, why don't you know what a fly ball is?
It's a fly ball. It's a can of corn. What are you talking about? Just leaves it to the third inning.
Young Sheldon comes on the screen. He just gives up and just walks out.
Hell yeah.
He's done. I love this idea. I want to see Rick Manning get slimed. That's really all it is.
Beautiful hair, Matt, and his teeth, his shining teeth.
It would slam. He'd be completely green, and then his teeth would just glow through it, and then it would slide off his hair. What are you talking about, Merritt? There's nothing
that's true. That. Yeah,
it's like a duck. He's what do you call that when the water doesn't affect it? But that's
hydrophobic.
There you go. I can't remember any words today, but hydrophobic is the one.
Not me. I know all the words.
But as for our favorite Cleveland baseball team, the state of that they're in is what the last thing we'll talk about is. It's not great.
No.
I think it's – I always have to use the caveat that it's not terrible either. They're not, like, completely void of talent. But I always had to, like, give a little asterisk that they shouldn't be here if they're willing to invest money. But without that, they're still a pretty talented team. They're still going to be a winning team. They could still probably get in the playoffs. But this is definitely a retooling year. And I think if you look at, like, where all these prospects are, the ones that we've been talking about for years now where they've been down lower in the minors, I mean, that includes Nolan Jones for a long time, but, like, George Valera and – Gabriel Arias, who they just got last year. But like all these guys are finally to the point where maybe next year or the year after they can start debuting. So I really think we're at a point where this year is just going to be sort of a down retooling year, not quite a full rebuild. And the year after that is going to be where they can start to compete again. It just sucks. I don't think we have to have this year if they were willing to put any money into it. But even without it, I think we're only like a year or two away from something resembling like a front-running team. I don't think it's going to be a front-runner this year at all. This is the epitome of just hope you get in and see what happens. It was that way for a couple of years, but they were also really good. And this year it is just literally, good Lord, sneak in there and hope you get hot. But
no, yeah, exactly. And you look at the teams in their division in particular. The Twins are still good, although I don't know if they're really making the moves to push the envelope at all. You know, like they may lose Nelson Cruz this year. A couple of, you know, I mean, they're not separating themselves, and I guess you could say the White Sox are starting to with some of the moves that they've made, but like they aren't really, they have gaps all over their lineup as well. They're turning into their own selves from a decade ago. Essentially, it was just three or four great players and a bunch of garbage. They don't even have Chris Sale. Their Chris Sale now is Lucas Giolito, who's good, but he's not Chris Sale good. So it's like Cleveland definitely still has a chance to win. I mean, the rotation, you touched it before, is going to be great. The bullpen is going to be better, probably. It's definitely a team built better for the slog as opposed to the sprint, just because they'll be able to take win, you know, runs away and win a couple of games on the margins here and there, and they'll lose, you know, a bunch. I mean, a tremendous amount of games. Maybe not tremendous. They'll probably lose 75 games at least, 80 games, 75 games. I'm comfortable saying they'll win 87 games.
I mean, I think it's going to be a winning team. I think it's going to be closer than
that's
should
the thing.
Be, by any means. But.
Their problem, if you want to call it that, is just that they've developed the thing so well that keeps you in games all season because their starting pitching is just too good. Like, they're going to win 3 out of every 5 days on average, probably. Like, you just kind of, if you want to rolling it out, like, you just, odds are their pitcher is going to be better than yours. I mean, you know, obviously sometimes they'll run into a Savale versus, I don't know who's an ace these days. Who's even good at pitching? Giolito game. Giolito will throw a one-hit shutout. Savale will give up 4 runs, and we'll be like, this sucks again? God damn it. And they'll lose, you know, they'll lose a ton of games 3-2 and 4-1, and they'll win a lot of games 3-2 and 1-0. And we'll hope that some of the young guys break up. Like you said, it's a retooling year. I mean, I've been wondering about, like, reinvestment looks like what? I guess they were paying, what, $70 million a year or $70 million last year in terms of payroll. And what is a good number? Let me ask you that. Well, what is a good number for a major league payroll? Is it over $100 million now? Do you think that they should be spending $100 million or more a year?
I mean, like, where they were a couple of years ago, like, what was it, 100? They were 130, 140 million, right? Like, somewhere.
Yeah,
like,
yeah. At least
that should be your quote-unquote small market is paying that.
I think 2019 they were $107 million or something like that. And I think you're right. I think that's the number where they should be. And, like, if anyone wants to say, like, well, they can't afford Lindor, like, what, they're going to pay him $30 million and the rest of the team $70 million combined? Like, yes, that's what they're going to do. That's the whole point of signing people to early contracts like they did with Ramirez and then having guys under rookie control so you can do that exact thing. Like, that's the exact answer. And they just can't do that. I don't know if I said this on the podcast or beforehand, but I still think it's just the front. It's the ownership trying to remove any long-term outlays of cash so that they're more attractive purchase. I mean, the team's still worth $1 billion, and every contract if they sign Lindor to a $300 million contract over 10 years, that is, if anything, less attractive to a potential buyer because it's a liability that they have to worry about 10 years down the road. So,
yeah. I don't know if you saw it today, but there was Paul Hoynes was talking about like Lindor at his Mets press conference and the stuff Lindor said. It was basically what Lindor said was he didn't think Cleveland had the resources or that they didn't say they had the resources. It was nice to be in a place that has the resources to potentially re-sign him. But Hoynes sort of just dropped a bomb in the middle of it and said that the Indians offered between $225 and $250 million, but Lindor wanted $350 million. We haven't gotten like that specific amount from anybody. Like Terry Pluto has said it was like $100 million apart, but we got that exact number. So it's either like the Indians, they think they have that much to spend over the next 10 years or whatever, or they knew Lindor wouldn't accept it and they just didn't want to look like they weren't trying. I don't know which one it is, but if it's the former, then in theory, they have like $25 million a year that they're planning to spend, which would be cool, which is, I mean, whether that's re-signing or like extending Shane Bieber or Jose Ramirez, but whatever it is, I mean, they seem like they might have it. I just don't know if they intended to actually pay that or not.
No, I will say that, I mean, that's a normal. I don't know. I mean, he's worth more than that, and I think he deserves more than that. It's just I don't think he was willing to accept that anyway. Maybe they do. Maybe they have $250 million to blow on a single player, but it's got to be the right player, and he was the right player to do it. I mean, I don't know if they're going to try that with Jose Ramirez too. He'll be a little bit old by then, but
yeah. But I guess the thing is, like, did they actually have it though, or did they think they just knew he wouldn't accept it, and they didn't want to look like they weren't trying. Like they just said like, oh, we're going to offer him this. And it's clearly way too low. And then maybe Lindor was insulted by that at some level. And that's why he had such a short goodbye message, but that's kind of inferring a lot.
We were talking about this on the Slack the other day. I didn't really put together the fact that they're making basically $100 million before they sell a single ticket. I mean, that's crazy. The fact that, and they have more expenses than just the players. Obviously they have to pay the lease on the park and they have to pay the other people who work there. And, but how much can that cost? $25 million? Probably not even that much. I have no idea. And they haven't sold a single ticket, but at the same time, obviously they're playing it that close to the vest. That sucks ass, and they shouldn't own the team in the first place. But
yeah. Yeah, no, they saw that like they're using it to actually generate revenue, which is probably a thing that sucks. It's not like Steve Cohen, where it's a toy for him. This is how they actually make money, which seems like a terrible idea. And it's terrible for everybody involved. For them, if this is how they're trying to make a living, and for us, because we have to watch them
work their finances. That's just where, we have to worry about what TurboTax comes back for that year. It's like, I hope they get their stimulus. Oh, no. They really need that $2,000 check, let me tell you, man.
Otherwise, Tesla investments are paying off soon.
Yeah, right. Yeah, well, good thing I invested in Litecoin. Did you say Bitcoin? No, Litecoin. Oh, no.
Oh, there goes Carrasco and Lindor.
So, it'd be cool if they could afford a $125 million payroll. Something that's not even huge in the scheme of the game itself. That's about average. Probably below average at this point, but that's just not where this team in particular stands. Like, there's this certain underclass in one way or other of teams, and Cleveland happens to be one of them. Because as you put it, as you said, they are owned by a group of people who need this to make their payment, to afford their house. I assume. I don't even know. You know, like I almost would prefer an owner like the Rockies have, where he's rich as ass, but he just is, you know, bad. He's just shitty and doesn't want to spend money or something. I don't know, just some team who are, at least I know they have, like the A's, you know, at least I know they have money. He's just being a jerk. Like it's almost sad that the Indians owners are just like, sorry guys, I can't make rent this month.
We got to shed a couple outfielders here. We can't afford
it. Yeah, we got to, we're cutting out dollar dog night. Sorry. we can't afford it.
Like, it's now $2 dog night. We need the money.
They're hot dog. We're just doing it we got it. I'm sorry, guys. First 1,000 hot dogs are a dollar. After that, they're going up to two. Gee whiz. So, that's like you said, that's kind of where the state of the team is. They just, they do everything right until the fact where they have to spend the money. Yep. And I don't know, lowballing Francisco Lindor of all people is not going to work. He's not going to play for $25 million a year. That is life changing. That is 10 times what life changing money would be to me. But at the same time, he's worth more than that. And he's,